In this episode, live cell blood analysis, colon cleansing, and flatulence from beans.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness.com podcast. We provide you with free exercise, nutrition, weight loss, triathlon, and wellness advice from the top fitness experts in the nation. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're just trying to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill, cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is Ben Greenfield, and before we go over much at all today, I've got a question for you. Why should you eat fat? In other words, is there any good reason ever to increase your consumption of fat? And if so, if your personal trainer, your doctor, your nutritionist told you that you need more fat in your diet, why would anybody who knows anything about nutrition actually tell you to eat more fat? Well, I want you to tell me, is there any good reason to eat fat? Vegetable fats, animal fats, any kind of fat. So we're talking omega-3s, monounsaturated fatty acids, trans fatty acids, hydrogenated fatty acids. There's a lot of information out there about fat. And I'm going to give away one of the brand new, my personal trainer told me to eat more fat t-shirts to the person who can give me the most compelling, best reason to eat more fat. All you gotta do is surf over to BenGreenfieldFitness.com, go down to the blog post, it was one of the more recent ones, posted it on May 11th, and answer that question in the comments. Is there really any good reason to eat more fat? I'm looking forward to hearing if there really is. And again, best answer is going to get one of the brand new Midnight Black and Lime Green BenGreenfieldFitness.com t-shirts. The front of it says BenGreenfieldFitness.com, and then the back says, my personal trainer told me to eat more fat. I've been wearing them to the gym and getting some cool responses. And by the way, if you do want one of those t-shirts and you don't feel like answering the question and you just want to support our show, on the right side of the page at BenGreenfieldFitness.com, you can donate to really help kind of keep our show going and help support the time that I put into interviewing and producing and getting this show out to you. So if you want to give any type of donation to the show, I am literally going to send out one of these t-shirts to anybody who donates. And all you got to do is surf over to the website and click on the right-hand side of the page where there's a picture of the t-shirt and it says you have the option to donate. So there you go.
Special announcements.
The first is about something called Hard Gainer Project X. I know that sounds kind of fringe, and it actually is. It's one of my friends is a personal trainer back east, and he really specializes more kind of in the development of muscle, and specifically really kind of optimum muscle building for guys. And he's been researching for the past few years how to really ideally get skinny guys to put on muscle. He's got some really, really good ideas. You know, I've always wanted to put out a program where I showed people how I went from being a 175-pound kind of scrawny kid in college all the way up to 220 pounds of muscle for a bodybuilding show at about 3% body fat. And I never really sat down and put that program into words or put all the things that I did from a nutrition and an exercise standpoint into words. Well, Jeff has. He actually has a really, really cool program. He sent it over to me the other day. I took a look at it, and it literally is like everything that I've really been wanting to get the word out to, or get the word out about, especially to skinny guys who need to build more muscle. I mean, that's literally the person that this book is written for. So, he has a free audio and free ebook that really goes into why it's so hard for skinny guys to put on muscle. Muscle. And I put a link to that free audio episode and free ebook in the show notes of this podcast. But what Hard Gainer Project X is his actual, it's about 100 pages. He sent it over to me and I read it. It's good. It's a 100-page manual along with a training diary that's literally just designed for what are called ectomorphs or skinny guys. So check that out. I put a link in the show notes of this podcast. I don't think it's released for another few days until May 19th, I believe, is when it actually comes out. But you can download his free MP3, or it's the entire first chapter, really, which has seven of the top reasons why it's hard for guys to put on muscle or for skinny guys to put on muscle. It's worth the time. I would definitely check it out, and this would be something that I endorse. I know it kind of goes a little bit outside the run-of-the-mill weightlifting or exercise advice, but Jeff's a smart guy, and I read the book, and it's good. So if you're a hard gainer, if you're a skinny guy, if you want to put on more muscle, check out that link in the show notes to this podcast. And that's about it for the special announcements. So what do you have coming at you now? We've got a jam-packed listener Q&A on beans and how to control flatulence when you're trying to eat healthy with beans. I don't know why I have to laugh every time I say flatulence, but it's funny. And then also a question on colon cleansing. I don't know why I laugh when I say colon cleansing, or I don't laugh when I say colon cleansing, but I laugh when I say flatulence. It's weird. And our special interview today is going to be on live cell blood analysis. Really interesting stuff. Interviewed a guy named Cody Dahl, who happens to be coming to the town that I live in, Spokane, Washington, to do a live cell blood analysis this weekend. So if you're a local listener in my area, you may want to surf over and say hey to Cody, and we're going to listen to some of the stuff that he has to say later on in this show. We also had Dr. Roby Mitchell from podcast episode number 42 write me an email and give me a little bit of feedback on some of the questions last week. Really intelligent guy, and I'm going to go over some of the stuff that he went over as well. Oh, finally, I do have about, well, since last week, I have exactly 68 of the Ben Greenfield Fitness 10 CD multi-disc set. Basically, all the audio that you hear on this show, I've cut out the commercials, I've cut out the special announcements, I've cut out the calendar of events, cut out everything except the interviews. And so I've got our top 24 interviews in CD format. It's about 1,500 minutes worth of audio. It comes on two CDs. And includes a write-up that really lays out everything that's in those CDs and different links and notes that I've written and things of that nature. So you can get that shipped to you at any time. You just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com. I've got a link to it in the show notes to this podcast. And it's a way that you can listen in your car or in your living room, or maybe hook up somebody in your life who really doesn't do the MP3 player thing or the computer audio thing, and give them one of those old school CDs. Never thought I'd see the day when CDs are old school, but yeah, CDs are old school.
Listener Q&A.
So, listener Ron writes in with the question, I see the value of eating beans since they're a low glycemic index carbohydrate and all that, but what about the terrible gas? I'm driving my family nuts since I started eating bean dip with vegetables, hummus with garbanzo beans, and putting beans on my salad. So, I've struggled with that issue as well. Beans are a great addition to a diet when you need to have carbohydrate, when you need to have energy, and you don't want to get a lot of grains or a lot of starches into your diet. But beans basically have what are called oligosaccharides in them. And I know it's a big word, but basically that's a bunch of sugar molecules linked together. Technically, it's about 3, 4, or 5 sugar molecules linked together. And they kind of accumulate in the bean in the final stages of that seed development. But the human digestive system basically doesn't have a lot of the enzymes that can handle those oligosaccharides. So a lot of times they'll leave the small intestine undigested, and then they'll move into your large intestine. They kind of sit there, and the bacteria in your large intestine or your lower intestinal tract starts to digest these things, and it produces carbon dioxide as a waste product. usually the most notorious beans for causing gas are navy beans and lima beans. But, you know, if you're having the hummus with the garbanzo beans, a.k.a. the chickpeas, or you're eating like a black bean dip with vegetables, or you're putting beans, let's say like kidney beans on your salad, then, yeah, you still are going to see some issues. So a few of the things that you can do is you can tenderize the beans before you eat them with some type of natural tenderizer that makes them more easily digestible in your small intestine. There's a type of seaweed that's actually great. It's good in iodine, or high in iodine, which is great for your thyroid. It's called kombu seaweed, and that's got something called glutamic acid in it, and that can actually help tenderize the beans. And all you would do is when you cook the beans, you put a little bit of that kombu seaweed, and you can get that usually in the oriental food section of a grocery store, or in the same place that you would find, say, like sushi wraps or some types of sea salts as well. The other thing that you can do is you can put a little bit of savory into the beans, and that actually reduces the effects of some of the types of oligosaccharides. And savory is just a seasoning. You can get that in the spice section, and you can put about 1 to 2 tablespoons of that in as you cook your beans. The other two that can help to pre-digest one of those types of carbohydrates, one of those type of oligosaccharides called the raffinose sugars, is cumin and fennel as well. Fennel is kind of a licorice-y tasting spice, and then cumin is think about like taco seasoning. It's kind of right along those lines. The longer you cook the beans, the more tender they're going to be, so the easier they're going to digest in the small intestine. So if you get them to the point where you can kind of mash them against the roof of your mouth with your tongue, then that usually means that they've cooked down a little bit better. Now, there's a difference between cooking a bean and blending a bean. When you blend a bean, that doesn't soften it the same way that heating it does. So like blending chickpeas that haven't been tenderized with cooking is still probably going to result in a little bit more gas from the hummus versus if you kind of soften those beans beforehand. You can use salt. I'm not sure why salt helps, but I've seen it suggested, like use sea salt or miso or soy sauce as the beans are getting towards the end of cooking. Apparently that's supposed to help a little bit. I don't know if that breaks down the carbohydrates, but it can help controlling the gas. And then the other thing that you can do is you can actually soften the protein chains and some of the other non-carbohydrate kind of indigestible compounds in beans by putting a little bit of apple cider vinegar or brown rice vinegar into the cooking liquid just during about the last 4 or 5 minutes when you're cooking the beans, and that will break them down. You could also marinate them in vinegar like in the fridge before you cook them. So vinegar actually does some of the things that cooking actually does. So if you simply don't want to cook your beans, period, let's say you're having like a 3-bean salad or something of that nature, you can use like a little bit of vinegar, a little bit of olive oil, and actually just make like a salad type of dish by using vinegar. And apple cider vinegar, brown rice vinegar are usually going to be two of the best. So of course you want to limit your consumption of beans. You don't want to eat too many, but what it comes down to is you can basically kind of artificially pre-digest the beans before they go into your intestinal tract, and that'll get more of them broken down in the small intestine. So let's move on to a question from listener Kelsey. She says, I just got the Ben Greenfield Fitness CD set, and I've been listening to all the episodes in my car on my way to work. I just finished the episode with Dr. Gittleman, where she talks about the gut flush plan and her colon cleansing kit. I feel like this might actually be the answer to all my bloating and fatigue, but how long does a colon cleanse actually take? If I've been eating crap for 10 years, will I have to take it for the next decade? Well, most colon cleanses, you're looking at right around the 6 to 8 week mark. Sometimes you can do them for a little bit longer. But the whole idea behind that gut flush colon cleansing kit from Dr. Gittleman is it's basically a bunch of different compounds that target accumulated waste and microorganisms, yeasts, different type of toxins that can affect your colon health and really affect your overall health, because a lot of stuff can get absorbed through that lower intestinal tract. It's kind of of a theme for today, the lower intestinal tract. So she's got an herbal formula that helps to clear your intestine of what would be called impacted waste or stuff that's just stuck in there. And that was a pretty interesting interview we did with her several months back where she talked about all the different things that are stuck up inside people. It's got stuff like a cranberry concentrate, a grapefruit seed extract, cayenne, slippery elm, which is kind of a digestive tonic, something called bromelain, which is it's an enzyme that can break down proteins. And it actually comes with a couple other, it comes with a liquid, which is a blend of wormwood, orange peel, cloves, butternut, and then also a powder probiotic formula to give you some good bacteria as you do the colon cleanse. So it's something that you take every day, and typically it is something that you would repeat. Usually you'd go through like about, I think two of her kits would take you a couple of months to do. But no, you wouldn't be on this for 10 years. And it's really not something where you're stuck on the toilet with both legs up in the air like Dumb and Dumber, you know, 10 times a day. You are regular. It does definitely soften your stool. You do definitely have some strange looking compounds that are going to end up in the toilet, especially if you've been eating a lot of bad food on a regular basis. But it's not like you're going to have to do a colon cleanse for the rest of your life. I have several clients who have tried this kit from Dr. Gittleman successfully, and they actually give any of our listeners a discount too on their stuff. All you have to do is mention this show or mention my name, and I think they give you like a 5%, it might be a 10% discount, but they send the kit to your home and you do the stool sample, and or I'm sorry, that's for their stool test. With this kit, they just send it straight to you and you start into it. But anyway, so they've got a website called unikeyhealth.com. I'll link to that colon cleansing kit in the show notes so you can check it out if you think that you might be walking around with parasites or yeast or you got a lot of bloating in your system. It's something to check out. Of course, you can get tested beforehand. You can do a test to see if a lot of this stuff is really inside you before you get the kit. But some people just do the cleanse just to be healthy. So that's the word on the colon cleansing kit. Okay, and then I did mention that Dr. Fit wrote in, and if you remember last week, somebody was asking about stress fractures, and he had an interesting observation for me. He mentioned that this girl with the fracture was from Canada, and that vitamin D is going to be a lot more likely to be deficient at higher latitudes. Now, he, as well as Dr. Minkoff, another really respected physician that we had on our show, both recommend that everyone should be supplementing with vitamin D. And the dosages kind of vary with vitamin D, but general recommendations fall into 400 all the way up to, I've seen as high as 2,000 international units for vitamin D. And generally most supplements, if you turn them around and look on the back, it's going to say IU. And the recommendations are really going to vary. But if you are deficient, you'd probably better off going for the higher end. Remember, vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. It's toxic, and so it is one of those ones you can overdose on. So more is not necessarily better. But that was a great observation from Dr. Fit, who also mentioned that a blood test can be done by your physician. And optimal levels for vitamin D are going to be 7D to 100 nanograms per milliliter of vitamin D. So good for overall health, good for bone repair, important for optimal performance also. And then the other kind of tip that he threw in there for me was to start using a little bit of magnesium oil. Remember, he mentioned that a lot of people are deficient in magnesium, and that magnesium oil, if applied about 1/2 of a teaspoon prior to a workout, can really turbocharge your workout. And his recommendation was the Essence of Life magnesium oil. So those were the bonus recommendations from Dr. Fit, who we interviewed in podcast episode number 42. So speaking of featured interview, we've got Cody Dahl coming up right here with an interview on live cell blood analysis. Listen in.
Featured topic.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is Ben Greenfield. And today, as promised, I'm going to introduce you to something that I hadn't heard of before until about a week ago when I received an email from a local natural food store here in Spokane, Washington, called Fresh Abundance. I subscribe to their email list. If you're a local listener in the Spokane or Coeur d'Alene area, this is actually a great resource for everything from raw goat's milk to fresh organic produce that really sustains the local farms. A lot of it can be delivered right to your doorstep, and it's a grocery store that I've frequented since I moved into the Spokane area, and they have several locations around here. And for those of you not in the Spokane area and just listening from across the world, this is going to be some interesting information for you, because we're talking about something called live cell blood analysis. I have a gentleman on the other line who's actually coming to Spokane next week, and I'll have him nail down those dates for, I believe it's May 16th and 17th, to offer this type of blood analysis. And I actually wanted to get him on the other line today and ask him a little bit about what it is and how it works. So, gentleman on the other line's name is Cody Dahl. And Cody, thank you for coming on the show today.
Hey, Ben, that's great.
Now, what is your background, Cody? You're from Canada, I know, up in Alberta, right?
Yeah, and I went to school for electronics engineering and went to work in the oil fields. We have an abundance of oil patch activity in Alberta, and became very specialized in instrumentation and dangerous top secret well testing. And anyways, the stressful lifestyle led to health problems in my early 30s. Had been around to doctors and excuse me. Okay, had to change places there. So, anyways, been to sort of a medical route, you know, wondering what was going on. I had arthritis and gingivitis and sciatica. And multiple aches and pains racking my body, and it was getting, interfering with my work, and began to check out naturopathic, homeopathic, and even other live cell blood analysis practitioners, and wasn't getting very much for results until I found Journey of Health. It was a practice in Calgary with the live cell blood analysis, and I told the gentleman there that, I wasn't interested in pills and potions anymore. You know, I'd spent a lot of money on that route and wasn't getting any kind of lasting result. And so anyways, he began to teach me a little bit about the diet, and with the feedback from the microscope giving us, you know, what to focus on, I began to get some really good results. And to make a longer story shorter, it's, you know, I'm now 47, and I'm looking and feeling actually much younger than I did in my early 30s then.
And this technique that you were working with, are you still there, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. This technique that you were working with at, what was the name of the place, Journey of Health?
That's right, yeah, Journey of Health.
Now, what was that live cell blood analysis? When you're talking about looking through the microscope, I assume that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, well, it's a high-powered research microscope. It's about in the $30,000 range. It's a very high-quality microscope, very good images, and lets you see a lot of detail of the actual living blood cells and other evidences that, of course, are mixed in with the blood from other parts of the body. Mm-hmm. And so from those evidences, we're able to do appropriate things, in a timely manner. And so everyone facing different sort of issues, having had different, exposures and bugs and, foods and lifestyle and so on, facing different internal conditions and, maybe symptoms being similar and so on, but maybe doing inappropriate things about it.
Now, when I was studying at University of Idaho, I did some volunteering in the emergency room at the hospital there. And I remember one night, one of the nurses brought me into the lab there and was showing me different slides of blood through the microscope. And is this any different than that in terms of simply looking at someone's blood and identifying various markers for diseases or viruses, et cetera? I mean, how is this live cell blood analysis different than what someone would do if they were to, say, walk into a hospital and have someone look at a slide of blood?
Sure. Basically, the microscope that you use, it does have higher magnification and give more detail. Generally, the blood that is drawn is from the vein when it's used for those, you know, for any kind of blood work. Mm-hmm. And that blood is already missing quite a bit of information as opposed to the arterial blood, which feeds the tissues. That's the sort of the higher pressure, you know, just rejuvenated blood by your internal organs, oxygenated, heading out to feed the tissues. And that
now,
blood
is that, is that because the blood that's coming back to the heart from the veins is deoxygenated? Is that the primary reason that you would want to look at that?
That's right. That it not only deoxygenated, but yeah, depleted in other ways, and basically missing some of the information that, you know, that you can gather from the supply side then.
Mm-hmm. And what type of information, I don't want to go too in-depth just so we don't bore the audience too much, but what type of information would you be looking at when you're doing a live cell blood analysis, you know, other than just the fact that you're looking at arterial blood versus venous blood?
Sure. Well, one of the things that's quite different is the sort of the condition of the red blood cells. And so the first screen, you know, when I switch to my high-powered objective, is a field of mostly red blood cells. And I might look through two or three of these fields before I even find white blood cells. Anyways, the condition of the red blood cells, there's a lot more to be learned from them from the supply side than rather from the venous side. And not only that, you know, medically they've been measuring cholesterol for 40 years and paying a lot of attention to that. And yet a lot of cholesterol is not circulating to the vein, and it is circulating in the artery. And of course we hear about the arteries filling up with cholesterol, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of information in the types of cholesterol which are never assessed medically from the venous side.
Mm-hmm. Like what types of cholesterol?
Well, you've heard about good cholesterol, bad cholesterol. Of course, you know, there's we see both types. And then there's all these subtypes of the bad cholesterol. And so it's not just LDL. There's, of course, you've heard of triglycerides. And right. then there's other types of bad cholesterols that could be found. Mm-hmm. There's which normally is not assessed medically at the lab.
Yeah, well, usually when I look at my client's blood work, they've got LDL, triglycerides, total cholesterol, and HDL.
Yeah.
Now, what else are you seeing in terms of cholesterol? What are the subcategories you're looking at?
Well, we're seeing the types of cholesterol that we see all those types, and then plus there's other types that aren't analyzed routinely that could be found on the venous side, such as what I know the acronym is LPA.
Uh-huh.
And I forget exactly what that, but it's another lipoprotein indicating a fatty liver.
Right.
And stress of the fat metabolism. And then there's all these sort of non-circulating cholesterol deposits. You know, you hear about the cholesterol building up in the artery. Well, there's little, how should I say, there's deposits of all kinds. There's different types of deposits in the artery. And under the skin, near where the lancet is striking the fingertip and severing some of the tiny capillary arteries. So we get to see some of these other cholesterol deposits, and not just locally from the fingertip, also circulating from other parts of the body. And so there's a tremendous amount of information in examining these other informations.
And that's what it's a fingertip lancet. So someone comes in and they're given a drop of blood from their fingertip.
Yeah. The fingertip having the, you know, highest number of nerve endings per square inch also has a vascular bed to support that sensitivity. And so, yeah, we also have the highest number of capillary arteries per square inch at the fingertip.
Now, let's say that someone is listening in and they're thinking, well, why wouldn't I just go to my doctor and get blood drawn? What would you tell someone?
Well, if you're getting good results from the medical system, fine. I just say that, you know, for the most part, the assurances, you know, oh, your cholesterol is normal and oh, these other tests are normal, aren't actually leading to optimum health. And even after these assurances, there's many fit people that are, you know, horrified when they have the heart attack if they survive. The majority of heart attacks first time and then resulting in death. But, you know, with a lot of assurances that they were fit and thinking that they're healthy. And so there's a medical sort of paradigm or way of thinking about health that just isn't quite fitting with sort of a healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to contrast, say, the printout report that someone were to get from a typical blood lab with, is it like a report that someone gets after they do this test, like a printout, or is it a consultation, or how does the reporting method differ, and what kind of type of things are people going to see on a live cell blood analysis report that they're not going to see on, say, like hospital blood work or blood work through their physician?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, they're going to get, you know, to see with their own eyes visually and sort of have a guided tour of, you know, of these findings. You know, I'm just sort of zooming around this field of blood cells, and there's a film on the slide that I prepared. And, you know, there's a lot of information. So, you know, the opening screen, I point out sort of, you know, what the observations that I'm making. And then I'm making notes on a chart, basically. And I assess 30 sort of categories of information.
Wow.
And so anyways, I can fill in the chart, but it's sort of meaningless. It's a chart that I've developed for my own records. And so, you know, there'll be some, you know, if there's another person trained, you know, they would recognize some of the things that I'm doing, but it's sort of relative. You know, I'm looking at a picture. There's a ton of information there. You know, I don't assess even all of it, just the bits and pieces that I understand about it.
Uh-huh. And so now, so there's 30 different categories that you're looking at?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just for the live cell analysis, and then there's some other types of analysis that I do as well. There's a technology developed by Drs. Heighton, Lagarde, and Bradford that is assessing the oxidation of the blood. So layers of blood on a slide as they oxidize will show up these acidic waste byproducts as well. So. Mm-hmm. It's quite a lot of information. I do a very thorough sort of, you know, report and coverage of that in my office in Calgary. I make a DVD recording, and I give that to the client just so they can sort of look at their blood. And even if we don't understand all of the information, it helps us, I guess, understand that we maybe need to be doing something appropriate for what we do understand.
Right.
And just seeing the, I often recommend a follow-up analysis anywhere from 30 to 60 days after the initial, so that, you know, some of my food recommendations could be, you know, having time to have their full effect.
So when someone, after you've looked at these categories, someone's going to get food recommendations. What else? What other types of recommendations are included on their follow-up report or on their DVD?
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, you know, I was tired of trying the supplement approach. And anyways, I found that food, especially when I was younger, worked very, very effectively. Basically, complete health turnaround and enjoying levels of health that I never even knew existed. So the food is powerful, but it's not instant. And so a lot of people, you know, are have difficulty implementing some of the food recommendations. And so, you know, I give the sort of a strategy based on the findings, and I explain that to them, and then explain sort of how to, you know, choose better foods to address their conditions. And we just have various degrees of success. You know, some people are able to implement, you know, maybe 50% of what I recommend, and they get good results. And other people are very, very diligent and focused, and we get spectacular results. Mm-hmm. And then some people are, you know, focused and diligent and just still get moderate results, in which case we sort of need to investigate further, because mm-hmm. we're sort of multidimensional. There's so many things affecting us. And yes, we focus on, you know, what we're putting in our mouth, but there's other things entering our body through our skin and mm-hmm. so on that are also affecting us. And so I do more, you know, detailed analysis. You know, I might get a clue from the blood, and I'll also ask a lot of questions. And so mm-hmm. generally just sort of a consultation to narrow down what can we change here to improve the picture. And then after that, I start to recommend supplements, and I'll assess the client's, you know, current supplements, or integrate them into their program, and just basically make sure that it's all working for them.
Can you give me some, let's go over some concrete examples of kind of non-run-of-the-mill things that people are going to be shown during that analysis, and then some of the benefits that they're going to take away from that, like some of the actual types of blood markers and what something like that would signify to someone.
Yeah, sure. That's a good question. Well, getting back to that various types of cholesterol, there's a lot of information that is never assessed at the medical lab present in these sort of non-circulating cholesterols. As a matter of fact, that's kind of where the anaerobic strongholds are for the microbes. These buildups of cholesterol, you know, sort of insulate the microbe from the blood flow, and they can, there's all kinds of microbes that I assess and then do specific recommendations for.
Mm-hmm. Like what type of what type of things?
Of course, very commonly in the blood, there's systemic candida yeast is sort of the most common finding. It's actually very unusual to not find that with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I equate that to vaccinations and use of antibiotics. It seems to, you know, be the norm here in North America. And the only clients that I've had that haven't had any candida that I could find with the microscope were people that, it was actually brother and sister, raised by a naturopathic doctor couple in Europe. Mm-hmm. And had never had a vaccination or antibiotics. So that's how I came up with that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But you can assess sort of the level of problem, candida being a type of fungus. There's actually several types of fungus that can be found in the blood. And, you know, each one sort of having a different food source and metabolism and effect on our behavior. And, of course, having a strategy to deal with all of that. And then there's some unusual microbes I find commonly. I say unusual in the sense that there's no medical name for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I often get clients that, you know, have had mysterious symptoms for some time and gone the full medical route, you know, and I'll make some kind of finding. And they'll exclaim, oh, well, I've, you know, had my liver tested. The doctor said it was fine. I was like, well, here's this evidence that I found that shows that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've been tested for parasites, you know, they didn't find any. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, if that's sort of a political thing where there's epidemics that are raging in North America that there is no medical treatment for and are therefore simply ignored.
Well, there are quite a few people who are walking around with symptoms that they've been trying to treat for years and haven't found much success doing, whether it be fatigue or resistance to weight loss or, you know, aching joints and a whole different range of symptoms. We've had a lot of different practitioners come on the show and talk about those type of things, you know, yeast, fungus, parasites, you know, all of these all these things that that I would consider kind of outside mainstream medicine. Now, when people are getting this live cell blood analysis performed, when they're looking at the results, are they going to be looking through the microscope, or do you project that onto like a screen, like a PowerPoint screen, or I'm sorry, presentation screen, or how does that work for someone?
Well, in my office, I have just a 20-inch flat screen monitor, and I'm thinking that I'll be, I'd like to get a projector. Would be nice to sort of have a larger image and sort of do a more effective presentation. Say, Bright Spirit there at the Fresh Abundance has volunteered to be my guinea pig, but she's brave. She'd like to have her blood analyzed, and I'd like to give a presentation there. And so I'm thinking about picking up a projector to, you know, project the video signal from the camera on the microscope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're going to be where in the Spokane area? Was I right on the dates, May 16th and 17th?
Yeah, that's correct. And depending on the response, we might stay a day longer if there's enough interest. And
is that a Friday and a Saturday?
Hey, Tanya, what were the dates again? Is that Friday and Saturday?
Actually, I just looked. It's a Saturday and a Sunday. And where are you going to be?
Yeah, that's the sort of the Division location. I know.
Okay, so the Fresh Abundance grocery store on Division Street in Spokane.
Yeah.
Okay, so for our Spokane listeners, that's where you could go to look into this and hook up with Cody and get an actual live cell blood analysis done to be able to look at some of those markers that he was talking about. So any other resources that you would point the audience towards, Cody?
Oh, yeah. Sort of my hero would be Gabriel Cousins at the Tree of Life down in Arizona. He does the live cell blood analysis as well, and he talks, you know, very frankly and boldly about what's going on, and he just completed a documentary about reversing diabetes in 30 days, or I believe the title is Curing Diabetes in 30 Days.
Mm-hmm.
Or There is a Cure for Diabetes is the title of this movie documentary, which is just finished. We just got our first copy of it, and it's very exciting. It's basically when you start doing something appropriate, instead of, you know, and working with better information and doing something appropriate, you know, for the situation, that's when you get results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, great information today. So live cell blood analysis, I'll put some of the resources to that Gabriel Cousins Tree of Life and his book up on the show notes for this episode. And again, if you're in the Spokane area, Cody Dahl will be here on March 16th and 17th down at the Fresh Abundance on Division Street. So, Cody, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure.
All right. I am going to sign out here and have a wonderful week from the BenGreenfieldFitness.com podcast. Remember, go to the website and answer the question, why should you eat fat? Give me the best compelling reason why fat should be included in the diet, and I will throw in the mail one of our brand spanking new BenGreenfieldFitness.com t-shirts. And if you also want to get one of those t-shirts and feel like donating to our show, you can now donate to the show. Very simple. We've got a little PayPal button that you can go to there, and I'll send a free t-shirt to anybody who helps support the Ben Green Fitness.com podcast. Finally, remember that you can get these CDs for your car or your home audio player. Makes a great gift to somebody who doesn't want to listen to the MP3s or to the audio from their computer, and it's about 1,500 minutes worth of jam-packed audio. Check all that out, as well as the links to everything that I talked about in the show notes to this podcast, episode number 43 at BenGreenfieldFitness.com. Have a great week.